This is a Triple J podcast.
Prescription pills, it was alcohol, it was ice, it was G.
That may be the view of young people, it's not the view of our government.
If I don't meet a girl, it's pretty hard to tell her that I'm uncontactable.
To connect, to have a good time, to dance it off like nobody's watching.
This is going to have an effect for generations to come.
All right, let's go. It's the Shake Up on Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. What are you after in your news this afternoon? A little bit of protein, maybe. Some robust political discussion. Maybe a sweet treat too, though. You want some fun stuff to round it all out. Well, the good news is, I've got all that. Here's a bit of a taste of what's coming up.
You're listening to Hack. We know that the Liberal Party will dump its commitment to net zero.
I'm just letting you guys know that all of the psychics that we have met with are awful pathological liars.
You love hearing my thoughts on Big Brother.
Well, you're too loud or you're stupid.
On Triple J.
Yeah, coming up, we're talking psychics and fortune tellers and everyone else in between because they've been in the news a bit this week and not for such good reasons, I think it's fair to say. So I'm asking what your questionable psychic advice was. What is the strangest thing that you've been told by a medium, a fortune teller? Was it true or completely off the mark? 0439757555. Message in now. But it is the shake-up, so we've got to meet our friends for the week. And because the past few days especially have definitely had a bit of a political taste, we're leaning in with two masterminds. And first, from beautiful Perth, former Labor staffer, author, reality TV star, Alicia Aitken-Radburn. Hello.
Hello, Dave. Thanks for calling me a mastermind.
She's a mastermind. And also, I feel like this particular shake-up, politics and Big Brother, really your dream show, yeah?
That is, if I could describe myself in two words, it would be politics and Big Brother.
Yeah, exactly.
Reality TV.
Really, that's it. I mean, it's been a while. Have you been hanging on to all the political news this week? Have you been watching all the updates?
I'm perplexed, so I've had to be following.
Yeah, okay. I can sense that there are some interesting takes from Alicia coming up. We'll get to those shortly. But also with us, someone who always brings top-tier analysis, another former political staffer from the other side, I guess you could say, founder of Hilmers Network for Liberal Women, journalist Charlotte Mortlock. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me on. Am I a mastermind as well?
You're of course you're a mastermind. You're both masterminds. Since you have been definitely into the news this week and hanging off every update.
Yeah, I've been following it pretty closely, particularly on Wednesday when that, like, five-hour meeting was taking place.
Yeah, I was seeing you pop up. I was like, oh, Charlotte's here, Charlotte's there. Yeah. Has it been a good week? Would we describe it as a good week? What do you reckon?
I'd say an exhausting week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you ready to debrief?
Oh, yeah.
this is a therapy session.
Yeah. How long have you guys got?
We got a while. We got a few minutes. I don't know, the combination of you two, it's the first time you've been together on the show. Yeah. I feel like it's going to go very, very well. It's either going to be complete chaos or incredibly formal. I don't know. Mm.
Both are good.
Both are good.
No, we want chaos. We want chaos.
Let's go.
The Liberal Party has crumbled under sustained pressure from the Nationals and abandoned its commitment to net zero.
On Triple J.
Oh, yeah. Will they? Won't they? Well, they did. The Liberals scrapping the commitment to net zero emissions by 2050. So has opposition leader Susan Lee saved the coalition from splitting up? And if so, at what cost? And do you agree that the focus should be bringing down power bills rather than climate action?
Hack. Two marathon meetings over two loaded words.
Great day for us, I think, to rip this band-aid off.
We're not pursuing net zero.
It'll just, I guess, alienate me further.
And I believe the Labor Party will eventually end up having to follow us on this policy.
What an absolute train wreck.
Wonderful day to be a Liberal.
And this is a bunch of nutters.
On Triple J.
Yeah, massive week in Canberra, and I'm keen to hear your thoughts. What do you think of the Liberal Party's decision to scrap the net zero targets? Will it cost the Liberal Party young voters? Did Susan Lee, the opposition leader, have any other choice? What do you think of how she has performed this week? We've already got a lot of messages coming through on Hack's Instagram. This is what Jess reckons.
Yeah, I'd rather pay a bit more in an energy bill than if that means doing more for the environment, because although it sucks to shell out that money for the energy bill, it sucks even more to do nothing on climate change.
Okay, they're Jess's thoughts. You may or may not agree with that. Bella also has a perspective.
I just feel like the Liberals are missing a major point here, which is that energy prices aren't going to matter when climate change has, like, completely destroyed the planet.
All right, two people there who think that the Liberals should have focused more on reaching that net zero goal by 2050. What do you think? You can call in 1300 055 536. You can message in your thoughts as well, 0439 757 555. It is the Shake Up on Hack. I'm Dave Marchese, joined by former Labor staffer Alicia Aitken-Radburn and former National staffer and journalist Charlotte Mortlock. Charlotte, we'll start with you. How do you reckon this week's been for the Liberal Party?
Look, I think in a lot of ways, I probably would have preferred if we had this conversation in 18 months' time, because I think the conversation around net zero will change a lot in 18 months. And I didn't think that we should have been leading this discussion.
How do you think it's going to change?
Well, I definitely do think that in the zeitgeist at the moment, there is a lot of conversation, particularly, you know, around pricing and around cost of bills, but also with the rhetoric that we have been using around climate change for the past decade. You know, I note that a lot of politicians in the UK are kind of changing their language, and we even saw Bill Gates, who's been one of the biggest advocates for climate action and remains to be so. But I think the hysterical language we've used around it actually hasn't been helpful to the cause. So I think in 18 months' time, there might be more nuance in the conversation to be able to say you 100% believe in climate change and you want climate action, but you don't have to be committed to net zero. I don't think at this point that's the conversation. I think if you want to abandon net zero, people associate that with climate denialism.
Okay. Alicia, your thoughts on this? Hysterical language used around climate change, what do you reckon?
I mean, I agree with what Charlotte says when she says when you talk about abandoning net zero, it reads as climate denialism. And I think I've really been trying to hone in on what's Susan Lee's strategy here. Is it that, okay, we concede this to the Conservatives and then sort of go to ground around climate change and net zero and just hope it sort of goes away so she can sort of carve a path? But the fact of the matter is, like, I think about, we're in November now. It's not going to go away because summer's around the corner. And you know what's going to happen? Like, I'm in Perth and what's on my desktop is the emergency WA screen. And there's going to be bushfires. They're going to be more extreme weather events. And climate change is something that we need to reckon with. And I think that that is what the majority of Australians are wanting from their leaders.
Can I offer an alternative idea of strategy for what I think Susan Lee is doing?
Please. Okay.
I think that, and I am really pro climate action, but I do think that around the world, countries are starting to pull out of net zero. And I think that it is not out of, you know, it's not completely fanciful to think that Labor would also pull out of net zero in the coming years.
You think that might happen?
Yeah.
Okay.
If we're not meeting our, if we're not like meeting, you know, the incremental targets, then I think that that is a potential reality. And what I think Susan Lee is doing is having this conversation now to get it done with and dealt with, hope that Labor before the election has to concede that they're also not on track, and then you have it looking like Labor's following us.
I can tell Alicia wants to say something. I've got some messages. Alicia, just quickly, do you have a response to that?
Oh, I was just going to say that's a really nice nuanced discussion, but I think how it's reading to voters is that the Liberals are not going to act on climate change. Mm. And I think that's a really important issue to voters, particularly voters of Hack, particularly listeners of Hack.
And voters of Hack, maybe. Yeah. Who knows? We've got a lot of messages coming through. Someone says net zero is destroying this country's economy and the environment. Well done, Liberals, for finally making a stand. Another person, though, says this is classic short-sighted fixes for the benefits of boomers, not looking at the long-term outlook for the rest of the world. And Scott in Newcastle says, if Australia cuts emissions to zero tomorrow, what's the impact on global temperatures? Zero. Net zero means net zero jobs. That is Scott's opinion there. But then someone else says the Libs will never be in power again. They're so disconnected with the Australian public. Did Susan Lee have much room to manoeuvre here, Charlotte? What do you think? Like, do you think this was the only decision she could have made?
No. So I think that, again, this conversation, if we had it in, let's all be really honest, the Liberals have a checkered history on climate. The Coalition does. Like, we weren't the fastest adapters of climate action. Like, I'm happy to admit that.
Alicia seems surprised by this.
I'm happy to concede that. And that is why I actually don't think we have enough credibility in this space to be leading the discussion on pulling out of net zero. I think it would have looked way better if we just bide our time, wait for Labor to concede that they're not going to make it, and then we also get to put forward an alternate option. That is, I don't think that we should be leading this discussion because we don't have the runs on the board, and the people who are being vocal for abandoning it, like Matt Canavan, Andrew Hastie, Angus Taylor, they are not people, they are not who the voters think are going to be for climate action.
Alicia, what do you think Labor's strategy is here, the government? Is it to just sit back and honestly yes. let this play out?
Absolutely, Dave. I think that the Labor Party is just looking across the aisle and just letting the Liberals do their thing. And it does, as Charlotte says, it feels, well, sorry, Charlotte, not putting words in your mouth.
Go for it.
Politically, politically, it feels like history repeating. That's what it feels like to me as an observer. And it's so interesting to talk about, I guess, to take the policy to one side and to talk about the electoral politics of it all. Like, Charlotte's such an advocate of women in the Liberal Party and women being elected to safe seats and women winning. And if I look at how this debate is going for Susan Lee, like, she's not winning.
what do you think, Charlotte? Like, yeah. Do you think Susan Lee has a future leading the coalition, leading the Liberals? Do you think that a lot of young women in particular are going to abandon the party? Those who are still with the party might think, nah, not for me now.
Yeah, so Hilmers did some polling with Resolve, which is a very respected, you know, pollster, and we polled in September 1,750 Australians on a range of issues. And on net zero, women between the ages of 18 and 50 65% of them wanted Australia to remain committed to net zero. And the way we worded the question, I think, is important. We said, regardless of whether Australia is on track, do you want us to remain committed to net zero? And 65% yes, said yes. So I actually probably wish that we stayed committed to this just through pure competitiveness of how to win an election. I do think there is space, though. Alicia, you were speaking about, you know, we could have this crazy summer with bushfires, and we could, and that would backfire for us. But we could also have massive blackouts this summer, and then that puts the attention on renewables and the transition.
Is it cheeky for Susan Lee to claim she can bring down power prices, Charlotte? Because we had, like, there was some analysis from energy expert Tony Wood this week that said it's about time for politicians across the board, not just the coalition but Labor as well, to stop promises to reduce power prices when they can't control physical infrastructure or the weather. Like, we just need to stop doing that. What do you think? Is it just because politicians can say whatever they want so far out from an election?
Yeah, I think that, again, going back to the language, like, there are people, there are absolutely, I think, a lot of people, power prices have gone up by 30%, and there are still people that want us to remain committed to net zero, even if the cost goes higher. But there's a lot of people who can't, and we really need to be, you know, that's a privilege if you can afford that. But I do think that talking about, you know, the way we can control it is a bit silly on some of the metrics, because the first thing I think of here is that we talk about keeping coal on for longer. We are a party of small government. We're not supposed to interfere with private markets. And there's a lot of those organisations and companies that don't want to extend the life of their coal plants. So that's probably like the circle that I can't really square from a policy and values point of view of why would we keep forcing those ones from a government point of view.
We've got a lot of messages coming through. Someone says, we're closing our coal manufacturing and income. Why not value add our coal here, attract overseas money and pay for the faster change to clean technology? Brendan says, I think the Liberals have made the right choice to go with the Nationals here. Finally, a bit of common sense. We do hardly anything in terms of emissions. Someone else says, I love Charlotte. She seems like a cool Liberal, but Susan Lee is the auntie at weddings that you try to avoid.
No.
Picks on bands like Joy Division for having nasty politics. Oh. And another person says the Liberal Party is aiming for net zero seats by 2030.
Dave, can I ask Charlotte a question?
Of course you can.
I'm wondering what's next for the Liberals, because I think looking at the last federal election, I think, okay, sort of rock bottom is probably too harsh a way to put it, but it was a point of reflection for the coalition and where to now. And it sort of feels like there's more to come. Mm. Now that, I guess, it feels like Susan Lee has conceded to the Conservatives. Mm. Like, what happens when the Conservatives push her on immigration? Like, is there more to come?
Yeah, have the Liberals lost all the power in this partnership?
Okay, so even from the point of, like, we were speaking before about that one of the messages you read there, mate. Some of those people that are in regional seats, there are environmental concerns about the rollout and the transition to renewables. And I do think that talking about climate as like a binary left or right, moderate versus conservative, isn't actually that helpful, because there's a lot of people who care a lot about climate change, but they live in the country and they are seeing the areas that they live in absolutely devastated. And there are, from a conservation point of view, they're really genuine concerns. And I don't think we can just be like, oh, those people are far right wingers or they don't believe in climate change. But I also think it's the same with immigration. Like, you are not everyone is a racist that wants to talk about immigration. And that kind of rhetoric I don't think is helpful. And so, yeah, maybe we will talk about immigration. But I know Susan Lee, I was at a speech last night that she did a speech and I was in the audience. And she did speak about immigration, and she said it's really important that we reduce the numbers. However, we value our multicultural society and we value our immigration, our migrant workers that contribute so much to our country.
Yeah. Okay. Just very quickly before we wrap this up, because we do have to move on. Alicia, I'm going to ask you, how long do you think Susan's going to stay on as leader?
Oh, I think the sharks will start circling probably a year out to the next federal election. And I don't think that this is the end of the story. I think we will see what happened to Malcolm Turnbull, like the conservative pressure will rise up. And okay. I do think that we will at some stage, I think someone like Hastie will be looking at the landscape and saying, oh, like how are Australians perceiving Albanese, am I going to go now or will I let Susan crash and crash through?
Interesting. Okay. And quickly, Charlotte, do you think that Susan's got much time as leader? Very quickly.
She is so brilliant. When you hear her background, she, you know, lived part of her life in a caravan.
Don't have time for all the background, darling.
If she gets clean air, she will survive. Okay. If we can actually get her talking about some policies and owning the space.
Well, maybe we can on Monday, because opposition leader Susan Lee will be on Hack on Monday.
Yay.
So we will be able to ask some questions there. A lot of messages coming through, but we've got to move on.
The 53-year-old woman is accused of posing as a psychic.
With the help of her 25-year-old daughter, allegedly tricked victims into taking out loans based on fake readings.
On Triple J.
It hasn't been a good week for fortune tellers, whether it's the allegations of multi-million dollar fraud levelled at a Sydney woman or Kim Kardashian slamming her psychic for predicting she would pass her bar exam when she actually failed in the end. I want to know, what's your psychic or fortune teller story? What's the most hectic piece of information you've received from one? And did it turn out to be true or horribly false? Call in 1300 055 36. You can message in to 0439 757 555. Already hearing from you on the text line. Someone says, my friend saw a psychic medium after their friend passed away and it was a really nice experience. Gave them closure, even shared some inside jokes. Another person, I once went to a psychic with my then boyfriend. She said that I'm in a great loving relationship and majorly misread, because it was an extremely toxic relationship and I thought surely she could have read that on my expressions. Someone else says, I was skeptical, but my psychic was so on point. Predicted stuff about my dog, my friends, that I'd work behind a camera, and now I'm a photographer. There are some foolers out there, but I don't think the automatic assumption that they all are is useful. All right, let's get into this with author, creator, Alicia Aitken-Radburn, journalist Charlotte Mortlock. I've got to ask, Alicia, do you believe?
I feel like you're going to tell me my fortune, Dave. I don't.
I believe that we're going to talk about this for a little bit and then we're going to move on and talk about something else. And I believe we'll run out of time as always. No, but honestly, do you believe in psychics?
I don't. I think that it's one of those things where I feel like we want to believe. And I feel like we want direction and for someone to be all-knowing. Like, that is so comforting. It reminds me of those old TV shows where it's like, I feel someone with the last name starting with M. And you know, you just know, like, we're about to talk about reality TV. You just know that the producers have gotten everyone to fill out questionnaires. Oh, and yeah. There is a lady with an aunt called Sally sitting in the third row.
Charlotte, what about you? Have you ever had an experience?
So I can always judge my mental health by my reliance on horoscopes.
Yes.
When I am rock bot, I am like, damn. Like, I'm reading that horoscope every day. I'm like, I totally agree with Alicia. It's like you're hoping some Jesus take the wheel. Like, somebody else be in control.
I was in love with this guy in university. And I shit you not, I would wake up every morning and have in my horoscope app not only my horoscope, but his.
Yeah,
as well.
I did that too. That and is, I'm like, that's really rock bottom.
Today's the day.
This is so funny. We're hearing from so many people about their experiences. Hayley says, I went to see a psychic and I was in a serious car accident on the way home. Well, didn't say whether they predicted it though, so that's horrible. But like, did the psychic not warn you about it?
Yeah.
This is what Mia had to say.
Okay, picture this. I'm living with Reggie, a very sassy black cat, and he just kind of isn't vibing with me. So I decided to get my housemate a pet psychic appointment. When it got to asking Reggie about why he was kind of wigged out by me, says that whenever I come home, I'm actually Reggie's anxiety trigger. So that was really good to know.
Poor Reggie, not doing so well. Mia, I don't know whether that information was accurate or not, but people are relying on all this stuff. Someone says, real psychics exist. Once I went to a spiritual church, a medium picked me and connected to a lost loved one. Another person says, I went to a psychic that was actually recommended by my therapist. She predicted that my friend's ex would try to get back with her to the exact day it happened. Wild times. Some of it's spooky, Charlotte.
It is spooky. And I've never done it myself, but I do have some good girlfriends who have used mediums to connect with loved ones, and they have found the exact same thing that you mentioned, like that closure. And when you're missing someone, and you know, they have said it's completely accurate. I know David the medium, he's a popular one in my circle of friends.
Okay,
shout
right.
out to him.
Shout out to David. Feeling it's time to move on and talk about Big Brother.
The original social experiment is returning home to Dreamworld
on Triple J.
Yeah, it's back, already making headlines for better and worse. Big Brother, what do you think? Are you into it? You reckon it's really useful, interesting entertainment? It helps us unpack big issues, or TV producers are really just trying to rot our brains.
Hack. This is one of the reasons why I love Big Brother.
Will it revive Australian television?
I don't know. I've just heard that sort of stuff like my whole life.
One comment from one housemate sent them into a spiral.
Big Brother wants you to believe in yourself.
People think I'm the best at being stupid.
Yes, there are privileges that come with being beautiful, but pretty privilege is a double-edged sword.
Yeah, but I'd rather that than people don't give me the time of day because they think I'm gross.
I don't think we can argue with Abs because she lives it.
Yeah, but it's been really hard for us to.
You guys live an easier life.
On Triple J.
Yeah, it's the shake-up on Hack. I'm Dave Marchese, getting into the headlines with former reality TV queen Alicia Aitken-Radburn and likely reality TV fan Charlotte Mortlock. What do we think?
TBC.
Charlotte, do you think...
I actually love The Bachelor. shout out Alicia.
Oh,
thank
well, you. Let's go to Alicia, who was Bachelor star, obviously. Have you been watching this season of Big Brother?
I've been watching snippets. I did try my first full episode the other night because I was fully drawn in by all of this stuff I've seen on socials, all of these real conversations.
And what do you think of the strategy this year? Like, we've got the live stream on TikTok that people are tuning into. It's pretty addictive, I've got to say that.
Yeah, I heard about someone getting, like, changed on the live stream. And again, they've nailed the socials because it does draw you towards the streaming.
Yeah, I mean, some of the headlines are obviously, there's, like, stuff about Colin crying while discussing his insecurities, one of the housemates. He was ranked least intelligent in the house. It was a really emotional kind of clip that went viral. But then there's other stuff like, you know, apparently some of the discussion on the live stream, there's been some racist remarks made, some really horrible things said as well. Does that, I mean, it's obviously problematic, Alicia, but does that just fuel producers and the reality TV machine? Are they like, we love it, bad publicity, everything, it's excellent?
Well, to me, really, like, my overarching feeling about it is it does return to the essence of Big Brother, and that is that it's reality TV and these are real conversations. Like, to me, it isn't helpful to kind of, like, I don't want to watch something that is completely diplomatic and politically correct, because what we're trying to watch is real Australians, their real dynamics, their real thoughts. And, like, yes, it may be uncomfortable. Yes, it's problematic, but these are views that are held by lots of people, and we're seeing real people discuss it. I think it's been really refreshing.
We've got some messages coming through. Someone says, I've stopped watching Big Brother. Just bogans is this person's opinion. Real Housewives all the way for me is a form of escapism. I don't know. Some people might think some of the housewives are bogans. I don't know. Another person says, when I heard they were still producing Big Brother, I thought, why is this happening? Charlotte, what did you think? Like, are you generally a fan of reality TV? Like you said, The Bachelor, but could you get into this?
I'd actually say I don't usually. I was really into The Bachelor kind of around Alicia's time, but that's really it. I've never really been into The Housewives and that sort of thing. I think maybe this is interesting because, you know, how on Instagram everyone used to use filters and then that became uncool because we wanted a more authentic version.
Yes.
I think reality TV became really curated as well, and you had a lot of influencers going on reality TV and it was too polished.
Yeah.
And so I think, like, there's like this nostalgia for like the OG reality TV, which is a little rougher, and that's why I think Big Brother might work.
Kind of what Alicia was saying in terms of getting, real conversations, real people in there. I don't know whether this has ever been floated before. It's just popped into my head now, but I'm keen to get your thoughts, both of you. Albo and Susan in the Big Brother.
Oh, perfect. You've made it. Or maybe I'm a Celebrity, get me out of here. Go down the Jackie Lambie route. Oh, it's a well-trodden path. Because I would watch Albo eat a grub or, you know, whatever the challenge is. You know how they make them eat, like,
true.
Stuff? It would be like a bull's testicle on Fear Factor or something. I would tune in, let's be honest.
During COVID, how they had, like, NRL Island. Remember there was all that discussion? Imagine if there was, like, politician, like, island and, like, that.
That's how we should do our politics. We've fixed everything here. A survival of the fittest? Put them on an island, make them discuss net zero.
Okay, it's not giving democracy. It's not giving Westminster.
This is the chaotic energy that my psychic predictions were picking up at the start of the show, that it's playing out right now. I mean, you get into a lot of the intricacies of reality TV in your book, The Villain Edit, Alicia, but do you feel like the glory days are gone and we're trying to just grab on to those, or do you think that it's only just kind of getting started in terms of how far we're pushing the boundaries and what could be next?
Oh, I don't know whether we've hit the peak yet, but I do think that this season of Big Brother is fairly successful in taking me back to those nostalgic days of, like, I remember people will remember Merlin and Free the Refugees with Gretel Colleen on the stage. There was this amazing conversation between Kim and Paul, who was like kind of your most sort of true blue ochre. They were discussing like what it means to be an Australian, and they actually came to a really beautiful, like, harmonious relationship with each other. And so, like, I'm here for it. Maybe we are still yet to see. I'm surprised we haven't. I know on other seasons they've gone full live.
Yeah.
Like, you can go on a website and just see every single angle. That seems, I wouldn't be signing up for that.
Well,
season.
Yeah, look, it's kind of interesting. Just very quickly, yes or no, Alicia, would you go on Big Brother? Would you ever give it a go?
Of course.
Charlotte, what do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, you would?
Me and Charlotte next season. I'd love it.
Political Island.
Oh my gosh, I'm there.
All right, we've got to wrap it up. We're running out of time, but thank you so much. That is all for the show. shake up. Big thanks to Alicia Aitken-Radburn. Alicia, thank you for coming on as always.
Thank you, Dave.
And Charlotte Mortlock, thank you.
Thank you.
Some messages coming through. Someone says, the new Squid Game is a lot more entertaining. A lot of people who are fans of Big Brother, though. Hardworking Hack Crew, thank you so much for all of your efforts this week. See ya. Hack.